He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen, and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now Chael Sonnen's on podcast1.com. And for that, you're welcome.
What's happening, guys? A very happy Wednesday to you all. Today's program is brought to you by BetDSI.com. Guys, BetDSI has been in business for over 20 years. I tell you all the time, if it's any major world or sporting event, they are taking action, giving odds, and paying out at BetDSI.com. They've even got mobile access if you want to download the app and make everything quick and easy for now and in the future. Go to BetDSI.com. Sign up right now using the promo code CHAEL200, and they will give you a 200% bonus on your deposit. To make math real simple, you pick the number. I'm going to say $500 just for simple math here to explain this. If you put up $500 at BetDSI.com using the promo code CHAEL200, when you check out, you will have $1,500 on the books. I have never in my life heard of a deal that will give you 200% and you get to pick the number, but they're doing it right now at BetDSI.com. All you got to do is sign up, use the promo code CHAEL200. Moving on, Joel, we are out here in New York City. We're doing some promotion. We got a big pay-per-view announcement. I will be taking on Vanderlei Silva. Mitrione is going to be taking on Fedor. It's all going down on pay-per-view on June 24th, and frankly, I'm enjoying the city. How about you?
My first time here, bro. My first time here, and I wish I wasn't on a diet. I'd like to be eating all of the gyros. And
you know, I love that you said that, because that's the thing about New York. You can talk about the buildings and the population and the streets and the people all you want. Man, this town is about food. There's food everywhere, and for guys like you and I from Oregon, our town closes down at, what, 10 o'clock? Everybody goes home, goes to sleep. I mean, it's a ghost town. New York? You go get something to eat at 4 in the morning if you can't sleep. You could stumble outside at 2 a.m., grab a hot dog, a gyro, a slice of pizza. I had a Philly cheesesteak. It's about the food. And I'll tell you what, people here are not the friendliest I've ever met. Not the friendliest people, and I'm not into the horn gimmick. Why is everybody honking their damn horn? I will go years in my hometown of Westland, Oregon, and never hear a horn. Literally, never hear a horn. They just honk their horn here nonstop. As much as they'll turn on a turn signal, they'll honk the damn horn. Where did that come from?
I have no idea, but nobody looks at you either. Like, on the street, as you're walking by them, nobody will actually make eye contact with you unless they're talking some crazy language I can hardly understand, which is New York English, I think.
All right, very, very, very good on that. And so we're out here in New York. We're going to be in Kankakee tomorrow. We're a bit of world travelers, aren't we? And then you know what comes up Friday, man? It is going down, the rematch. It is King Mo versus Rampage. Did you happen to catch their media call?
Read about it, and I loved it. I hope you loved. Well, there was a couple interesting points. What was cool and gangster was King Mo, and what was odd was Rampage saying that his coach had told him it was at 235 pounds.
Yeah, so I had a couple of takeaways. First off, I enjoyed it. I think that Rampage, as far as an entertainer, as a charismatic entertainer, is so underrated. I can tell you, parts of my career, people ask, everywhere I go, I get asked, well, who's a better talker, you or Connor? They're always comparing Connor and I. And I always think, well, you know, you guys are kind of leaving out the ringmaster there. You're leaving out Rampage. Rampage is funnier than hell. He's quick. He's got charisma. It's very hard to beat him in verbal warfare. You know, I've watched him turn the script on guys so many times in a brilliant way. And then King Mo, man, he was holding his own. And as far as that 235, King Mo was offered a fight, but they did not tell him against who. And right, we've talked about that many times. That's how Bellator preserves these fight announcements. They don't tell anybody, including the participants. So King Mo was offered a contract, and they told him it could be at heavyweight or it could be at 235, but wouldn't tell him who it was against. Mo's stance the whole time is, I fight at weight. I don't care what weight, but I fight at weights, and 235, to quote Mo, ain't no weight class, which is funnier than hell when he said that. 235 ain't no weight class. So he made it a heavyweight. So I found out it was Rampage, and Rampage just said, look, I beat you before, and I'll be the first to acknowledge it was controversial, but I'm going to come in weighing 260. And I thought that was a compelling line. Now, compelling in two ways. Rampage sees that as a benefit to him. I see that as a disadvantage to him. I just know when my weight gets heavy, I slow down a little bit, I get tired a little faster. If you can get on top of a guy, yeah, you can smother him a little easier. But that's kind of the only time that helps. If you end up on bottom, boy, it's hard to move. You end up on your feet, it's hard to be fast. But Rampage sees it as an advantage. I thought it was interesting. I was glad Rampage brought it up because it is a talking point.
Well, with a week, when they had that announcement, it was 4 or 5 days ago when they had that conference. And now we're a couple days before the fight. So if Rampage thought he had to make two, and it sounded like he had to make 285, and he finds out during the press conference, when he said 260, that means he's 260. Right now. So he figured he was going to cut 25 pounds. That makes sense when you're big like that. My takeaway is Rampage thinks that maybe he's going to big brother Mo, and I don't see that happening. I see this being an advantage for Mo. I think Mo's going to win the fight. My question is, didn't they used to be buddies?
No, they never did. Those two never got it right. They were two charismatic fighters, but they always knew we're in the same weight class. No, they were never overly friendly even. They had some conversations that you might have seen, but that's where Rampage is so good. You know, he'll smile and pay you some kind of a compliment, and he'll get you to kind of come into that trap a little, and then he flipped the script on you. So maybe you only watched part of some of their interviews, but no, Page was never overly friendly. I think he always knew Mo and I are going to meet up.
Now,
and, you know, I agree with your assessment. I do see it as a disadvantage, but you have to trust the guy who is doing it. And Rampage was very sincere, at least in his belief. Now, I believed a few things, too, that turned out not to be true, so we'll see how this works out for him. But he was sincere in his belief that weight is going to help him. And Mo only goes about 211. You know, Mo looks humongous. He feels humongous. If you look on the scale, he's not humongous. He's not a huge guy. When he was wrestling, trying to make Olympic teams, it was at 96 kilograms, which what converts to about 213, 214 pounds. When he was wrestling in college, it was at 197. Before they changed the weight, it was at 190. You know, Mo was a guy that could have been a middleweight in fighting, should be a light heavyweight, but has competed so many times at heavyweight. And so many people just don't know what a challenge it is for Mo. He never gets credit for the fact that he is giving up so much weight. He is not as big as he looks. You see him on TV, he looks like a monster. You see him in person, he looks like a monster. You get him on a scale, Joel, he only weighs 211. It's 211 the right way. You know, Randy Couture was that same way. He was weighing 222 in his prime, winning heavyweight championships. But he looked and felt about 240. It was a strength deal. It was an explosive issue. Mo deserves a lot more credit because when he goes up to heavyweight, he's not a heavyweight. And people don't understand that. I mean, he just fought Krokop. Krokop was showing up about 250, devastating striker, devastating fire. Mo didn't say a word. If that's where the fight's at, that's where Mo's at.
Now, I've never met Mo. I'll tell you two cool things.
You've never met King Mo?
Never met him.
Oh, you love him.
But I'll tell you this. When he named himself King Mo all those years ago, I was like, oh, my God, he named himself King Mo. And it took... And I was listening to the press conference, and they said King Mo. That's beautiful. But I will tell you this. I was out years ago. I was out at Randy's gym. And I was up. You know, he's got that little sauna upstairs, and then there's a wrestling area.
Yeah.
Okay. So I was in the sauna, and Mo was getting wrestling rounds in. There was also a practice going on. There was a group of high school kids. Five, maybe six, getting ready for a cadet, a nationals, something in the summertime. And within 20 minutes of Mo wrestling, he then started coaching the guys. He'd never met these kids before. And 20 minutes later, he was coaching them, and he was coaching them like he had known them forever. So... that was the one and only time I ever saw him, but I thought that was really, really cool of him. I mean, he just took over. He took over and put him through a workout, put him through a wrestling practice.
Yeah, that is cool. And you know, he's a wrestling guy. I've seen him do that. I've seen some other times where he had to go at 6 a.m. and work out with some high school kid. And I even asked him why. And he said, well, the guy asked me. And that was it. A kid had asked him for time. The only time he could do it was before school. Mo got up and went and did it. And it's a very interesting fight. I have to check my words a little bit carefuler than I normally would on this because I'm calling it. I will be there and part of the broadcast team, so I have a bit of a responsibility there to not just weigh in with the full assessment that I would like to give. But I do like this fight for a couple of reasons. One, I love to watch Mo. I love to watch Rampage. But secondly, I did not think that Rampage won that first fight. When that was over, not only did I not think he won, Rampage didn't think he won. He said that to Mo in the ring. He was cool about it. Everything was fine. They raised his hand, and now you got to sing a different tune. So to run this one back and do it again does make a lot of sense. Now, when you change the parameters, when you move it up a weight class, and now you're talking about a guy that weighed in alongside of you at the same weight that you did, which was 205 pounds, and now you're going to weigh in. One guy's claiming he's going to weigh in at 260. Mo will weigh in at 211 and with his clothes on, maybe as high as 213. It does add a component. You know, that's the component that Conor took away when he fought Diaz in the second time. He said, I don't want any excuse. I want the exact same thing. But when you do change the component, it gives guys like you and I that need to talk and speculate and analyze. It does give us a little bit more room. I would normally look at a boxer from boxing times. What did you weigh in at? I can remember a time when Mike Tyson did a training camp. He was going to fight Lennox Lewis. He did his training camp in Hawaii. We all kind of just rolled our eyes and go, Mike, how much training are you going to get in Hawaii? And then he shows up. It's the heaviest he ever weighed in. He's sluggish. He's tired. And he gets KO'd. So fighters' weight does matter because it also represents the discipline that they showed getting ready for that match. When you're at heavyweight, you don't have to show that same discipline. A lot of guys making weight forces them as a byproduct to get in shape because now they got to get that extra run in. They got to get that run to get their weight down. That ups their cardio. So normally I would look at this in Rampage and just go, look, you're so big, it shows a lack of discipline. But Rampage spoke on that, and he said, no, it absolutely doesn't. I didn't want to show all the same discipline. That's true, but my body is better, bigger. We have to at least listen to him. The proof's going to be in the pudding. Friday night, live, free, and only on Spike TV. But he claims that weight is going to help him. And I can't think of a time that Rampage has lied to us in the past. And that does change things.
The one thing about Rampage is I've watched almost all his fights. And I've watched him fight, continue to fight, and continue to compete no matter how tired he was. Where he could have found a way out, and he chose to stay in there and continue to fight. And that is going to benefit him here because he is going to get tired. He is. There's no way he doesn't get really tired at that weight. He's older. He's bigger. But he is tough. He will stay in the fight, in my opinion.
I fully agree with that. Rampage, even when he has not trained, it did not make any difference. He went as many rounds as he needed to go. He's never found that way out ever. Even in his last contest, you know, he takes on the judo guy who was Olympic gold medalist. And I would argue that Page was not overly ready for that fight. But he went out and he stood his ground and he slugged it out for 15 minutes and he won. And a sharp Rampage probably would have finished that fight. But he does fight. He does not give up. And Mo knows that. But it's a very interesting match. You know, it really is an interesting match. Their first fight was a lot of fun to watch. And it was controversial. It ended in a controversial decision. And I co-signed that. I was surprised with that decision. But now they're going to redo it. We've got the fighter, after we've already seen him fight, that we watched and go, well, Mo's the better fighter. Regardless of who won, Mo was the better fighter. But now he's got 55 more pounds. And with the way that Mo fights, you don't know if he's going to wrestle or he's going to box. I think that size will slow Page down on his feet. I think it will also make Page harder to get off of his feet if Mo should choose to wrestle. I just think that there's some talking points, and it really does weigh to this weight, and I don't think enough has been made of it. I think that's the telling factor. It's either one way or the other, man. It's either going to help him or it's going to hurt him. I'm talking about Rampage. Normally, it would hurt a guy, but Page weighed in on it. He had time to lose weight. He said he didn't want to lose weight. He wanted to be as big as he could. He's claiming he's coming at 260. I don't believe him. I think he'll come in under 250. I was also just with him not that long ago. That just wasn't a 260-pound guy. I think that a little of that was some mind games. He may even come in the 240s, but he's still sizably bigger. That's still 30 pounds.
You know, as you were talking about that and thinking about Rampage's personality, he's known the whole time it was a heavyweight fight. There's no way he did not know it was a heavyweight fight.
Who are you talking
Rampage.
About? Rampage. Rampage? Oh, because he said he thought it was at 235.
Yeah, and he said his manager had been telling him it was, and he even busted him out on the on that conference last week.
Yeah.
And then I'm sitting here thinking about it, and I'm like, of course he knew.
And well, there's a couple of things there. Though, again, if you're going to speculate, Joel, don't forget there's two things at play there. The manager may have known a better and sharper and crisper Rampage is a smaller Rampage. And he may have just lied to him and said it's 235 because he knew, or at least he believed that that would help him. But Rampage did sign the contract. The contracts aren't overly big. It would have been in black and white that it was at heavyweight. Well, plus, there was an announcement by Bellator that it was at heavyweight. That's when Mo made the statement, I fight in weight classes and 235 ain't no weight class.
Well, also, Mo told them, they announced it at heavyweight. It's on the poster at heavyweight. Your contract says heavyweight. You know it's heavyweight. And then I started thinking about it, and I was like, he knows it's heavyweight. I was literally now just thinking about that he knows heavyweight. So we talked about this on the plane on the way here. Did you see the Iowa commit? Because this branches, even though it's wrestling, it branches to every sport. The 16-year-old commit out of Iowa that decommitted.
Yeah, you're talking about Gavin Teasdale, who committed to Iowa and then he decommitted. Do you have a thought on that, or do you want me to go? Because I have some thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page.
Well,
but,
Joel, let's start with this, because Teasdale said he'd go to Iowa, then he said he won it, and he looked like a welcher. He looked like a guy that went back on his word, and that's kind of how the media portrayed him. First off, he is not allowed to commit, so he did not commit anywhere. Just to start with that, he said, I'm going to go to Iowa. The NCAA has time periods where you can do that. And a commitment, by any definition, is a two-way street. You commit to them, they commit to you. That did not happen on Iowa's part and could not happen on Iowa's part per the NCAA. It was not a signing period, and Gavin was not of age for them to make their end of the commitment. So he did not welch on anything. He made a statement in the media. He meant it when he said it. He did not have any kind of authority to do it. And him going back on that and changing his mind is well within his lanes. And for anyone to take a commitment or make a commitment from a 16-year-old kid who has the right to look at five colleges, has not looked at any of them, including Iowa. He hadn't even done his trip to Iowa. But Spencer Lee went out there. His coach, Strip Matter, was from there. And he just said, I'm going to be an Iowa guy, and he was proud of it. But he changed his mind, so he should get no flack for that whatsoever. But a lot of people don't understand that the NCAA has a clearinghouse, and they have rules, and Teasdale did not qualify. It was not in the time period, and no real commitment was made other than he used the word commitment.
Michigan.
He wrongly used the word.
You make a good point about who's committing to who. There needs to be a mutual commitment. Michigan football last year, the coach Jim Harbaugh, got under a lot of flack because he had committed to give scholarships to sophomores and juniors, and then he took, now they're coming out their senior year, it's in the spring, they need to sign their letter of intent. He decommitted his offer to them, so it is a two-way street, and it can only happen when you're a senior. Is that correct?
Yeah, let's see. Isn't there an early signing?
An early signing, but I don't know how binding it is.
It's binding. If you sign a letter of intent, it is binding, and you can only sign it in those periods. I thought there was something where a junior, at some part of your junior year, right towards the very end, you could. So I can't speak on that. I don't know. There is an early signing period for seniors, but it should be exclusive for seniors. You know, even our own Oregonian Travis Whitlake committed to Penn State. But it's not a real – until they can commit to him, until the NCAA will recognize it, until a letter of intent can be signed, it's not – I mean, you can say it all you want. You are fair game. Penn State had every right to go after Teasdale. They did go after Teasdale. Once the letter of intent is signed, he's off limits, but that's not the case. He committed to something that he was not of age or within the parameters to commit to, which means the word he broke the very definition of the word commitment. He misused that word. People are saying, well, you made a commitment, you got to follow through on your word. It's like he misused that word. He was not able to commit if he wanted to. How do you tie this into MMA? Or are you just wondering my thoughts on that?
How do I tie it into MMA?
Yeah.
I don't tie it into MMA.
Oh, I thought you had said at the beginning, for those of you who don't care about wrestling, you'll still understand.
It transfers to football, to basketball, to soccer, to it's high school scholastic athletes. You know, they're 16 years old. This is a new thing in the last 5 to 7 years, I would say, that they have the early signings. When I was coming up, your senior year after your sport is when you figured out where you were going. And then you've got to figure it out. You're going to college. You're going away from home. You're telling a 16-year-old kid? I mean, that's what it is. He's a kid. I mean, lad's 14, 2 years, lad's going to – it's nonsense to me.
It is nonsense, but there is no villain here. I think that's what I want my point to be. It is not Teasdale that's a villain who at 16 years old cannot, by law, NCAA standards, practices, anything, make a commitment. And Iowa's not even mad at him. Iowa's like, look, we get it. We don't have a deal here. You misused the word. Iowa's not mad at him. Penn State's not mad at him. But I saw some fans that were trying to say, hey, your word's got to mean something. They're right on that. Your word does have to mean something. If you're not going to give slack to a 16-year-old kid who misused a term that he's not even allowed to use per the NCAA, you're wrong. He misused a word in commitment. He said, I'm going to – I know a lot of people who have said, I'm going to such and such school. They just weren't blue chippers. So there was absolutely no fallback. This happens to be a blue-chipping national champion that changed his mind. So what? Nothing to see here.
We are 100% in agreement on that. I tell you what I was doing last night. I couldn't sleep. I was, you know, online on my phone like you are right now. And I had watched a sparring session that was just done here recently in the last week or so.
Dillashaw?
No, Connor, and Connor looked like a good boxer. He looked like a good boxer, but he didn't look like the best boxer in the world. And then right underneath that link or that YouTube video was a video of the gentleman Chris Van Herden, who's a former 147-pound boxing world champ from South Africa that Connor sparred with last year. And he did an interview about the sparring, and he was like, hey, I hadn't trained in a month, but I saw that I was getting a chance to put my skill set up against Connor's skill set, and it's what we all think about. We think, of course, the boxer is supposed to be a better stand-up boxer than the MMA guy, and he went 6 rounds with Connor, and he said Connor's a good boxer. He said he is a good boxer. This was in May of last year. But he also said he's not going to beat Floyd. He's not going to beat any of the top 10 guys in the sport. That's ridiculous, and that goes to your point of how ridiculous that is.
Yeah, and you know, our overwhelming point is, so what? We want to see the contest. If these two guys want to go out and compete, we want to see it. So give us what we want. To act like Connor shouldn't be given the opportunity, if it's what the fans want and both fighters want to do it, sure he should. To act as though Connor should be given a chance to win that fight is an embarrassment to boxing. That is people saying we don't respect boxing. Because if you're bringing in a guy who's never done this professionally against a guy who's never lost professionally, and you think the guy that's never done it can win, it means you don't respect our sport. So yes, the proof's in the pudding. He got in the ring. He did some sparring, but that was May of last year. Let him grow. Let him get better. Let him work on some stuff. Let Floyd get a little bit older and hopefully slow down, though there's no signs of that happening. But allow those talking points to come in and allow people to hedge their bets and make plans for their party and buy the pay-per-view. I don't think that anybody should attempt to discredit Connor or by the outcome of this match. He should not win. It's a sport that he does not do. And if he's willing to go out and compete, he gets courage points from everybody, right? He gets a pat on the back for everybody, and that's where it ends, regardless of the outcome here, which better be fast and devastating and against him for the sake of the integrity of boxing. Floyd, on the other hand, has a lot of pressure. Floyd needs to go out and put him away in 1 round. in what it better be in 30 seconds, but if Connor even makes it out of the first round, Connor wins. Absolutely. And people cannot get lost on this. This is not Connor's sport. This is not what Connor does. This is what Floyd does. This is Floyd's sport. He needs to put him away. This is the best in one sport versus a guy who's never done it. That's your average Joe Good athlete taking on LeBron and beating him, taking on McEnroe, taking on Tiger Woods and beating them in their sport, going out and racing against Dale Earnhardt Jr. when the guy's never raced a car before. It's ridiculous, and Earnhardt had better win. And nobody in those other contests that I just laid out would give a guy a chance. But people are giving Connor a chance against Floyd. And that is a complete disrespect. It is showing what people think of boxing. They think that it's a fringe, fake, discredited sport. And that is the bigger story here.
I tell you what, I agree 100% with you that Connor should lose that fight. At every point you have there, I'll be rooting for him.
I'll be rooting for him too.
I'll be rooting for him. I'll pay whatever they pay, whatever they charge, I'll pay and I'll be rooting for him.
Yeah, I'll contribute my money to that purse. I'll do everything I can. We'll talk about it on the show. We'll build that up as much as we can. But I'm going to lay the groundwork now. This isn't MMA versus boxing, and now we settle the score on which one is better. It's none of those things. It's a contest that two guys want to go into. Connor is in a no-lose situation. As many people that are going to try to smear this in his face when it's done, they're just wrong. He should lose. He should not be willing to do it. He should not even have the courage to go and try it, but he does. It's a win for Connor. Everybody listening to this show has a car, and y'all want a different car. That's true, too. Guys, do not buy a car, new or used, without checking out TrueCar. You can download the app to your phone. If you're at a desktop, go to www.truecar.com. Here's how it works. Go in virtually over the internet and build the car you want. Year, make, model, color, type in your zip code, and find out what people in your area paid for that exact same car. At that point, moving forward, you will be connected and work directly with a TrueCar certified dealer. They will have the car. Most people are saving almost $4,000 off of the MSRP. There is over 13,000 TrueCar certified dealerships in this country. No more seeing an ad, getting down to the dealership, spending the day and sometimes the weekend down there and leaving in a stripped down version of the car that you fell in love with because the ad was wrong. Get the app today. So when you are ready, you have it. If you're at a desktop and that time is now, www.truecar.com. TrueCar, tell a friend.
Hey everyone, this is Sean Wheelock inviting you to check out our new MMA podcast, Sean Funky and the Baddest Man, right here on Podcast One. Every week I'll be with welterweight titleist Ben Funky Askren and the baddest man on the planet, Joe Warren, to take you inside the sport of MMA. So join us every Wednesday for all new episodes of Sean Funky and the Baddest Man. Download and listen at PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, and subscribe on iTunes.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
You're welcome. You're welcome with Jail Sonnen.
Does King Mo know you jinxed his Olympic bid?
Yes, he does.
He does?
Yes, he does.
Go ahead and speak on that.
King Mo was wrestling Andy Robot in the final wrestle-off.
The second match. It was best two out of three. He had already won the first one.
For the 2008 Olympic team. They were in the third match, actually. It was one apiece. They were out there in the third, and Mo was ahead, and there was no time left. I mean, there was seconds.
Minute.
No,
45 seconds.
Oh, I feel like there was, I wanted to say more like 8-9 seconds. Wasn't it that short? I feel like, I mean, time was up. And I sent Mo a text, congrats. I want to be the first to congratulate him, right? Congrats. Rovat turns him, makes the team. I jinxed him. That's the whole story.
You did jinx him. But years later, at some point, he knew that. He got that text. He was like, you're an idiot.
No. He thought it was great. He thought it was funny. You know, Mo had he had one foot out already. And, you know, he was the man in wrestling. He was the man at 96 kilograms. And then he couldn't quite get past Cormier. Really close matches. But Cormier would always win. Mo goes down to 85 kilograms and was a lock. And Robot came out of nowhere. Now, Robot was always very good and very respected, but he was not supposed to be the guy. You know, you had Herbert in that way. It was a really tough weight. And Robot came out of nowhere, surprised everybody. And Robot had beaten Mo the year before for the world. He pinned him, turned him in a chest lock, stepped over and pinned him. So Robot was the only guy that believed he could win, but that was the only guy he needed to believe he could win. And he went out and did. But yeah, I sent him that text, that congrats. Right as time was running down, boom, Robot turns him.
Yeah, buddy.
So what do you got? What are you thinking? So we got a big show in Kankakee tomorrow. I thought that the press tour for the Bellator pay-per-view has really been off the charts. It has not ceased to impress me at any of the media we've done today. I mean, we've been over to Howard Stern. I've never been on Howard Stern before. Just so many opportunities that they have, so much respect, so much ground that Bellator has gained. And, you know, to go out and go into pay-per-view, I think is exciting. I'm a pay-per-view guy. I don't fully understand television ratings and how that works and how you manipulate that other than you let people know and trying to learn that. But I'm new to pay-per-view. Daddy's back on pay-per-view. Daddy, I'm the king of pay-per-view. That's where I belong. But to find out the media opportunities that Bellator has access to, Joel, we've been all over the city, man. Really quite impressive by them, not by us. I mean, we're just tag-alongs, but wow.
Well, you were really, really impressive, first off. Last week, I had a bunch of questions from the fans. And one of the questions, once they announced that fight, was, hey, how are they going to market this fight? Both of you guys, I mean, you have a bunch of fights that the UFC doesn't own, but Vanderlei has very few. So how are they going to use that content? They had different questions about that. And I said, put a mic in Chael's face. You'll be all right.
Yeah, it's not rocket science. You don't always have to have B-roll in old fights. I mean, there's plenty of clips that you can build up. You know, there's a big demand for the entire card. And it's flattering to be on top of the bill. But the reality is Mitrione and Fedor is going to bring in a lot of attention. Michael Chandler is going to bring in a lot of attention. Vanderlei coming back after being out of the sport for so long is going to bring in a lot of attention. And I think that we've experienced some of that just when we've been out here, just for the opportunities that we've had and the exposure that we've had. And, you know, so there's a lot that goes into it. And the guy on top of the bill, so it's me in this case, always gets the credit. But I've been the guy that's not on top of the bill that was still selling the pay-per-views. And I've kind of got, hey, wait a minute, you guys have this formula wrong. This is a group effort. And, you know, the fans got to get behind. There's a lot of things that need to happen. And watching Bellator organize that, I've just been impressed, man. I'm really impressed. They're going to New York. It's the media capital of the world. And, again, we've seen that. We've seen all the media. We've seen the population. And I'll tell you what, the Russian contingency that's on the East Coast that is pining to see Fedor come out here and fight has surprised me.
I didn't get that part of this until I got out here to just see this is the place for that fight. That, you know, you could have it in Vegas, you could have it in LA, those places that sell out too, but speaking on your point, this is the melting pot, this is the Big Apple, this is the place for that fight, and it's pretty easy to get here from everywhere they're going to come from.
Yeah,
I mean, from as easy as coming from another country can be.
Yeah, I agree with that. Hey, let me go back to something. Did we ever weigh in? I know you and I talked about this prior. Did we ever talk on the air about the Christy Mack war machine trial that came to a head? I feel like we did.
We did.
What did we say about that? Did we just report that the war machine came in second on that and went down on 29 of the, what, they have 36 charges against him, or roughly, and he went down on 29 of them? Sentencing hasn't come in. Is that all we told the fans?
Pretty much. I mean, we both agreed his defense sucked, but he didn't have a defense.
Yeah, he didn't have a defense. He did not have a defense because he did not say, I am falsely accused. I didn't do this. And that was the only thing. Hey, man, if you're falsely accused here, you need to let us know. That's what this trial's about. If you did not do it. But he was kind of saying, well, I did do it, but, you know, I want to be forgiven for it. But he didn't even go. I was really unclear on his defense, and he didn't take the stand. It's like, War Machine, the only guy here that thinks you should walk is you. You need to come out and tell us why. You need to tell us what we're missing, because the reports aren't good. The eyewitness testimony is not good.
The pictures are not good.
The 911 calls aren't good. It's very clear that she was beaten. But if you're saying you didn't do it, and that's the only thing that gets you to walk. If I'm on the jury, that's the only thing that gets you to walk. I know she was beaten. But if you're saying it wasn't by you, I need to hear that. He never said those things. So when he turns down a plea deal and goes to trial, but then doesn't come out and say, hey, I'm falsely accused and I'm being set up, or somebody else did this, or mistaken identity, or whatever he could have gone to, he didn't do any of those things. Like, War Machine, I can't make a case for you. If you're not going to make a case for yourself, I sure as hell can't do it, because I wasn't there. Two people were there, you and her. She's the only one we've heard from. She says it was you. Now, you need to go on and say if it was not you, but you didn't do that, which leads us to believe it was. There just wasn't much you could do, which made me think, why in the hell did you stand trial?
Yeah, why didn't
I
you
still
take
don't
the,
know the answer
why didn't
to
you
that?
Take the plea? I'm not.
Because when you're wrong, it's important to say you're wrong. Hey, man, I should not have done that. I need to be punished. I was wrong. There's somewhere we can go with that. Now, we're not going to see him for 40 years, but there's somewhere we can go with a guy that owns something. Saying I'm not guilty, but then not saying, you know, that it wasn't me. Hey, mistaken identity, or whatever it could have been, right? I'm grasping at straws here, but that's what the whole defense would have been. I was just confused. Or weren't you confused by the defense? It's like, hey, did you guys never sit him down in the back and go, War Machine, you're pleading not guilty, but you are guilty. You did do this. They're, for reasons unknown, they're offering us a deal to skirt this through the system and not make them go through the process. Let's take the deal. Don't you owe that to him as a defense attorney? And perhaps that conversation was had, but if it wasn't, boy, it should have been, right?
I mentioned this before. I said one thing that did happen during the defense's final argument is the defense stood up and said, hey, we did 9 of these. We're guilty on 9 of these, but the rest of them should go out. And then the defense attorney came back to the defense table where War Machine was, and they started arguing. The defense and War Machine started arguing back and forth, and they said, well, no, we're guilty on 8, but the 9th one was assault on the other guy, the guy that was there, and War Machine said, no, that was self-defense. I don't want to talk about it. I'm disgusted by it. I couldn't imagine beating a man like that, let alone a woman.
You can talk about it now because justice prevailed. It's over. I mean, justice was done here. He failed. The defense, whatever charade he tried to put up, didn't work. So
you're saying it wasn't much of a charade.
I'm just saying I was really confused by the whole thing. I was confused from Jump Street what his defense was going to be, unless he was going to claim, hey, I wasn't even there. And that's the only, and he'd have to prove that. He'd have to have an alibi and prove he wasn't there. That was the only, there was going to be no justification. And I was irritated, Joel. I was irritated, and I still am, that he thought he could do that and not be punished. Not get away with it. Not be caught. He was admitting I'm caught. I did it, essentially. I mean, essentially, by not denying it, you're saying he did. But then he thought he shouldn't be punished. I'm going, hey, we've got some real psychological issues here. We have some real psychological issues. If you're not able to look at that and say that behavior was wrong.
Yeah. Let's get off the dirt road and get back on the road here. Did you see the UFC announced? What's that?
Go ahead.
What's that? What is that? I don't even know what that
just
is.
Just go ahead.
You go ahead.
Go ahead. You're the one that steered us off it. I was go ahead.
Okay, make that topic make sense to anybody on the planet.
What are you saying? That's what's irritating about it, is I'm doing a shoot on what happened, reporting it, and you're trying to get me off it as though somehow I'm on the wrong side of this. I'm not on the wrong side of this. I'm not on War Machine's side.
No, I'm not saying you're okay, I'm just saying I don't want to talk about it.
Why? What is making you uncomfortable about it?
I don't know.
This is a case that happened.
A professional fighter put the wood to a 115-pound girl.
Great, and justice was served. What part of this topic has you uncomfortable? Are you not happy justice was served? Is that the message you want to get? Well, what are you doing getting me off it?
Okay, stay on it.
Well, I want to know why you wanted to get off of it.
I don't think it's a topic we talk on this show. Truthfully.
What do you want to talk about then? If you're going to bridge a gap to get somewhere else, what?
That's what I just tried to get there, and then you were like, meow, meow.
Well, you're
buying
time.
Did you feel yourself go meow, meow? Did you notice that the UFC is having an event on June 25th, in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and it's BJ versus Dennis Seaver?
No. BJ Penn versus Dennis Seaver.
BJ Penn versus Dennis Seaver.
Is that the main event?
Yeah, I believe so.
They got to stop, man. They got to stop with that. When a guy's not having a level, when you're having the problems BJ's having, you throw him in a match, not a five rounder. You just can't. You got to stop. I don't know why those fights ever went to five rounds. I have no idea whose idea that was. I have no idea the savings on booking less fights or why you think you need that kind of TV time. Not very many five round fights make it five rounds. Almost no five-round fights are fun to watch. I have no idea why they did the five-round rule. And now you're going to take a guy that hasn't won a fight in a meaningful period of time, who's up there in age, and you're going to stick him in a five-round atmosphere.
Well, I don't know if it's a five-round. I know he's on that card.
His main event, he's five rounds.
Okay. But to go back a little bit, after his last fight, I thought he should retire. And you said, you know what? There's a place for BJ in fighting. It's just not fighting the killers at the top. Well, Dennis Seaver is a great fighter. He's been fighting forever in the UFC, but this is a good matchup. To your point that he does have a place in the sport.
Yeah, I think that same thing. And in this sport, it is about contenders, right? If you're not the champion on top of the bill, you need guys on the roster who are striving to be. That is the rule. There are some times where you get an exception where you have a guy like BJ Penn with a meaningful skill set, a big fan base, and a presence where he can go in, participate in a sport he loves, stay involved, continue his career, but the matchups do need to be a little bit more favorable. I don't know how else to word it. Dennis Seaver can beat BJ Penn, but BJ Penn could beat Dennis Seaver too. So it's a good match. It's a good match. I don't have an opinion on who's going to win that fight just yet. You caught me off guard with that, but it's a good, fair matchup. I have thought that people need to consider that, though. You know, so many people were calling, you called for BJ's retirement, and so did some other people. But he might have fought the guy in Yair, that's the best in the world. He might be that good. We don't know. He's so new. He's never been stopped. He's never been beaten yet. He might be the guy. And so, when you put BJ, it's like, hey, do I really have to retire when I just lost to the world's best? They did that same thing to Ronda, calling for her retirement. It's like, look, Ronda's not going to be champion. She never belonged in that spot. But are you saying there's not a spot for her? That's insane. If people still want to see her compete and she's still able to do it and she's still got the eye of the tiger, yeah, is she going to need some more favorable matchups to stay in? Sure. I'm not saying give her matches you know she can win, but now that you see where her skills are and you see what reality is, there's still a place for her, and I've never understood how you go from top of the bill to out of the sport. You know, BJ's last fight, regardless of the outcome, he was the main event. When you're working your way up the sport, your first thing is you're trying to get a contract. Then you're trying, so now you're in there somewhere, but now you want to be on the main card. Okay, so you're going to have to start in some prelims, work your way up, and get to the main card. You then want to work your way into a co-main, to a main, to a title. That's the process. But as a guy backs out of the sport, he has the right to follow that same process. He has the right to go from main event to co-main to main card to undercard to out of the sport. And when I have seen some guys have such incredible pressure put on them and have to go from main to out of the sport, I thought, well, I don't know if that was completely right. That's not really the process of this. There is a progression and there's a regression, but that architecture is in place. It's been laid out for years. Let a guy go through the process. He can still be involved.
My takeaway from that is just doing research on the people we have on the shows, including yourself, including who you fought the last 10 years. You're still at the top of the bill. You're still fighting a killer. Randy Couture, you can each and every one of them, killer after killer after killer. No, it's never been done before where you are at the very top that you're now fighting a guy that's 5-2. The regression that you talk about is something that might work, but it's never been done before. I've never I've never saw it in any way, shape, or form, whether it was in MMA or boxing.
Yeah, I just want to see guys go out and compete. That's what I personally want to see, because when they don't do that, I know what's really going on. And you'll see some guys go out there and get clobbered. And, you know, if you were to talk about my career, since 2009, I have not fought anybody that wasn't a world champion. I fought two guys that weren't world champions. However, they were number one contenders at the time that I fought them. And I got those fights because nobody else would do it. It's hard to win those fights. It is very hard to just keep on beating world champions and number one contenders. It's tough. But if those are the cards you're dealt and that's what you're going to play, great. What I don't like is when a guy comes out that's been getting cleaned up by the top guys and then keeps on demanding top guys. Because what he's saying is, yeah, I realize I'm going to lose, but it sure is a lot easier to say I lost to and then fill in the blank. I lost to a world champion, or I lost to a Frankie Edgar, or I lost to these top guys. I like a guy like BJ Penn. You decide who the opponent is, and I'll go take him on. I like guys like that. I admire it. I don't love the guys that are demanding the highest guys, and I want to fight all of the best. Hey, man, why don't you fight somebody you can compete with? If you're going to call somebody out, fight somebody you can compete with, because you falling down and getting carried out night after night just isn't fooling anybody.
I think that's what Vitor told himself when he said, hey, I'll fight CM Punk.
It could have been. You know, there was a little bit of that. That's kind of what Michael Bisping had to say about it. He said, hey, you call out a guy who's only done this one time. You know, you're a former world champion. The one time the guy did do it, it was at 170 pounds. Now you want the guy to move up to your weight of 185. Yeah, you know, it was a little bit bizarre that he did that he, you know, essentially had demoted himself down to calling out a guy from a different weight class with an experience level that was insurmountable. It was a little bit bizarre.
You know, we talked about Matt Hughes last week, and Hoyce had come out and said, yeah, I'd fight him again. Bellator keeps their cards to themselves. Do you think that's a match they make?
Yeah, maybe. I think so. I mean, it would come down to a numbers game. They can't overpay for that, and Matt Hughes was greatly overpaid by the UFC. Matt Hughes doesn't know that about himself. He thinks he was drawn and selling to. He wasn't doing any of those things. He was an excellent fighter. He was the best fighter in the world at the time, deserved to be world champion. He fought anybody at any time, and he did some heavy lifting, and he was rewarded, greatly compensated beyond the numbers he brought in because of that. If he is lost in those numbers, and he thinks that he can come off the shelf and get a fight with anybody for those, no, they're not going to get off the starting point. But if he comes in and goes, hey, I am sincere that I want to compete, and then Bellator can come back and go, okay, well, here's what our analysts say your value is, let's do something, I think they will get somewhere. And I know I would like to see that fight. I'm not going to clamor for that fight, and that's the world's greatest, you know, I got a great feeling when Kavanaugh suggested Gunnar Nelson versus Wonderboy Stephen Thompson. I go, whoa, that's good. When you told me Derek Lewis was going to fight Mark Hunt, I go, whoa, I want to see that. That's very interesting and intriguing for me. I don't have the same feeling there, but I do want to see it. I will tune in and watch Hoyce versus Matt Hughes. I like a comeback fight. I always like a Hoyce Gracie fight. Now you got a former world champion in Matt Hughes, a Hall of Famer that we never thought we'd see. There's something cool there. That's where it ends. That's not something I'm clamoring to do. And there's a number that fight is worth. If Matt Hughes understands that process and can come in and do that, great. If he is lost in, hey, I'm the biggest star because the UFC appreciated me to the point that they said I was, no, the numbers are the numbers. Here's what you brought in. Here's what we believe you can bring in today. And here's what we're willing to pay for it. If they want to do that, yeah. But I don't want to see anybody lose. I don't want to see Bellator or anybody lose. You know, you got to control those purse strings. And the UFC is taking so much heat for that to the point that now they're in a class action lawsuit, when the reality is controlling the purse strings moves the business and moves the industry and the company forward. It's the single most important thing.
Why do you think Reese packed up in the middle of the night, moved 2,600 miles to Maryland, but he wouldn't drive 150 miles to come see us?
To Chicago?
No, to New York.
Because Miss Katie is in Maryland, that's why he went. That's an incentive, and apparently you and I just aren't one. I mean, I would say the answer is pretty clear. We may not like the answer.
He moved away from us.
He moved away from us.
He's definitely not going
to
drive an
hour
and a half.
He wanted to see Miss Katie. He left Joel and Chael. Why would he drive 300 miles round trip to come see the guys he just bailed on?
I haven't gotten along with him any better since he left.
Really?
No, I have. I've gotten along with them great since he left. That's what I wanted to say. Like, our relationship is great now that he's gone.
Yeah, well, they say that the distance is the most important thing for a relationship. Distance makes the heart grow fonder.
Reese boy, you didn't come see us.
Hey, so what do you got? You know, I do want to circle back to this. Rampage and Mo, I can't really weigh in on a prediction, but you can. What is your final analysis there?
See, that's one of those things where I'm a fan. And
that's okay. Do you agree? Is it fair for me to say that we thought Mo won the first fight? Do you agree with that? Before the decision came in, did you think they were going to raise Mo's hand?
I thought it was closer. I thought it could have went either way.
Okay.
I didn't think it was.
All right. So when you watched them before, you thought it was close. So let me ask you, let's just break it down a little bit. Do you think the size favor? So if you're saying it's so tit for tat, it was so close. Let's bring the weight into this. Does the weight help Rampage or hurt him? Because if we're talking about a game, a contest that's going to be separated by inches, then we have to look to the weight. So is it pro Rampage or is it pro Mo?
I'm pro Mo. It's got nothing to do with the weight. It's got to do with that Mo is still in his prime and Rampage is not. It's 100% to do with that. I don't think Mo's best fights are behind him. I think they're in front of him. I think that's the kind of guy that could go on a 2-year run, go from Bellator to be the UFC champ in 2 years on a streak. That's what kind of talent. But I'm a King Mo guy, you know.
Okay, so Mo, is Mo your final answer?
Mo is my final answer.
I got lost in your answer somewhere. Hey, I want to bring this up. Al Snow, we talked to him on Beyond the Fight. I had fun with that, and I learned a few things. Did you think that Al was a surprisingly good guest?
No, not that he was a surprising good guest, that he was surprising in the way he got his message across. You know, I said, you know, it's kind of like listening to a professor. And I had watched the videos of him, you know, training the fighters, and Al Snow is a badass. And he's a tough coach, and he came on, and he was super articulate, and he knew everything, and he was super kind. And afterwards, you know, he had sent me some texts, hey, thanks, appreciate everything. And I was like, dude, you're literally the nicest person on the planet. He said, there's a whole bunch of people that would not agree with that.
Yeah, when you get a legend in his industry like Al Snow, been around 35 years, and he comes on and wants to be nice to us for having him on, it is a little bit like, hey, wait a minute. You know, we were grateful to have you. We're grateful for the knowledge you imparted. You know, Al said something that I thought was interesting. He said, everybody's a mark. Everybody is a mark. And you want to know who the biggest mark is?
The guy who doesn't think he's a mark.
The guy who doesn't think he's a mark. And I see it all the time in MMA where these guys mark out and you go, guys, you don't understand what we're doing here. And I can't explain it to you. You either get it or you don't. And I'll see it from people in the business, referees and judges that mark out and think that their position's bigger than it is when they're bringing in no dollars, all the way down to the MMA reporters that are still in mom's basement putting out their articles. And they haven't changed over 15 years because they don't get it. They are marks. And you can't make a guy understand it. He's either going to take the time to stand back at 40,000 feet, look down and realize what's happening in this sport, or he's not. And it does shock me when a guy can be around 15 years and still not get it.
I went and watched a bunch of Al Snow videos last night. Not old videos, but new videos of that guy lifting weights and doing these super slow push-ups. That dude's a powerhouse. I mean, he's got to be 62, 63 years old. Man, he does some incredible. He does some lifting that you're just like, Al, why are you doing that? Why are you putting 225 pounds and doing front squats? I mean, why don't you just do regular squats? Why are you torturing yourself with that bar? So I was blown away. Big fan of Al Snow. Especially after talking to him.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, history in any industry is so important. And when he would break down the wrestling industry to guys, you know, because so many guys, and we see this in MMA too, that's why I bring this up. We see the newer guys in MMA that come in with an entitlement that's like, guys, if you studied the history, you wouldn't be entitled. You wouldn't be talking about money fights. You'd be so appreciative that there's money in fights. you'd be so appreciative that there's people watching and there's opportunity and that you're doing autographs and signing pictures, because it didn't used to be the way that way. And the guys that laid the groundwork, that did this for free in carnival tents, at dog parks like myself, in bingo halls, that got this sport going, aren't being it's not retroactive. It doesn't go back and you start getting, you know, checks and notoriety. But we also don't want it.
For the first,
we were happy to be there. We're happy to be in those bingo halls. We're happy to be, you know, in those carnival tents. We're happy to be at the racetracks and the crazy places they set up rinks. We're happy to have those opportunities. We were grateful. And when you have these guys now talking about it, you know, Al Snow really broke it down for him. He broke it down to, look, let me explain how a carnival works. This is a carnival. We're setting up a tent. We're selling tickets. We're popping the popcorn. And then we're going to tear it all down and move on to the next city. But if we don't draw tonight, we don't eat tonight. We're all in this thing together. Everybody sits at the same table. And it's so important that you understand the history of that. And when you do see these new generations coming in and talk about the money fights, you do stand back and kind of scratch your head and go, guys, go get a promoter's license. Try this sometime. Go get a promoter's license and put on your own event. And just see how hard it is when you have people that want to take everything instead of adding to it. It's like showing up to a potluck without bringing a meal for everybody else to share. You only want to take from the table.
Yeah, I'll tell you, to kind of expand on what you're saying there, I've had some questions about, hey, what was it like, you know, being able to watch all these legends back in the early days of Team Quest? Where do you think it was going? And I was like, my thought is, I thought it was really cool that Danny and Matt and Randy could make money beating somebody up. And I thought it was really cool that Chael was going all over hell and gone to pick up $300 or $400 to fight. I thought that was really cool. Did I ever think it was going to be here? No, I would have made different decisions had I. For the first 10 or 11 years of the sport, it wasn't about how big the sport's going to get. It was about, when's the sport going to go away? So there's a whole new generation that doesn't know that. And that's to complement your point.
Yeah, you know, and there's just so many moving parts about it that people don't have an appreciation for. You know, if you were to look at what Coker's doing at Bellator, some people believe that's like the NFL, where that's around, that's been around for, that's going to be around forever. And man, it's not like that. Bellator did a lot of things to get in with Spike TV, to get this whole thing done. I mean, there was a lot of people that had to say yes. It wasn't an entitlement. You look at the UFC's being sued right now. You go, really? You're going to sue the UFC? They made bets. They made absolute bets. They were smart enough to get away and walk away from the table while they still had chips. The hardest thing to do in gambling. Generally, when a guy does that, Joel, when he gets up and walks away and he beat the house, so irregular. When he does that, he gets credit for it. Somebody pats him on the back and says, good job getting up and walking out, knowing when you were hot, knowing where your energy levels were, knowing that if you didn't leave, you were going to give those chips back and the house would win again. People are now mad that the house didn't win. And you just go, where did this come from? You know, you look at Vince McMahon, who pays out far less than Coker or Dana does, has a product and a company that is valued at far higher, and he is appreciated. You look at the NCAA, which is the scum of the earth, and wrote their own rule that they cannot pay these athletes. And then any default they go to when they get challenged or end up in any kind of a court case, go, well, it's just a rule. We're just following the rules. Well, you wrote the rule. Nobody brings that up. Somebody at the NCAA was smart enough years ago to say we could collect all the revenues, pay it out however we want, but we can't give any to the athletes. They default back to the rule that they wrote, and they actually hold it up in court, and they win. The IOC, the next scum of the earth next to the NCAA, the greatest trick they ever pulled was convincing people that Olympic athletes should not be paid. Now, they will marketize it. They will monetize it. They will commercialize it into the ground. They will make up sports that aren't even sports. You want to look any further, just go look at the Winter Olympics. Not even real sports. They will bring in millions of dollars with these makeshift phony sports that a guy like me could never, ever play because I don't have any goddamn snow. I could never be in the Winter Olympics, and neither can my son, because we don't have any snow. They're fake sports. And they will commercialize it and keep all of the money. And if they are ever called out, they go, well, you know, it's a rule. We have a rule here that our athletes can't be, but we'd love to pay them. I consider it, but we got this rule. You wrote the rule. It's a scam. So you take somebody like the UFC, and then you want to take them to court because they left the table while they were ahead instead of giving it all back to the house? It's absolutely insane. You want to go over to Scott Coker and start negotiating and bending him over when he's working 7 days a week around the clock in different time zones in different continents in different states in different countries at all times so that there is a table that guys can eat from and participate in? It is the strangest thing that I've seen, and the history really matters. And that's where Al Snow smartened up the guys in the wrestling business. He explained to them what it really is. We are a carnival. We are traveling around. We're setting up a tent. We're selling tickets. We're popping popcorn. Then we're going to tear it down and go to another town and try to do the same thing. And if everybody participates and everybody helps and everybody has a job tomorrow. But if one guy goes off script and goes into business for himself, one bad apple can ruin the bunch. And now you've got all these bad apples. It's like, guys, if I could tell you what it was like in the late 90s, in the early 2000s, begging, absolutely begging to get an opportunity to go out and compete and show off a skill set that you've worked hard to have. I don't think you'd have the same mindset, but we don't have enough historians out there telling guys what it was like. I mean, they just simply wouldn't believe it. And I really think that their attitudes would be different. I thought that Al did a great job when he goes and talks to the young wrestlers to explaining to them, this is where it came from. This is where your ancestors and your roots came from that have now set the stage to do record events, WWE Royal Rumble. 53,000 seats is what that building had. 53,000 people is how many were there to watch it. It is incredible, but if you look back, and I think the wrestlers, because again, Vince pays them less than Coker or Dana pays his athletes, and Vince's product is valued higher than either one of Coker or Dana's products are. And he gets no flack. But the one thing Vince does, he makes sure those guys understand history because history repeats itself. And he lets them know very quickly we could get off track and repeat and be off television and be back in the tents and the bingo halls. And if you don't do things right, if we don't have a disciplined financial structure where we are setting money aside for a rainy day, we're going to be gone. And some of these athletes, man, they don't care. They'll take it all now to set themselves up and to hell with everybody else. And if you don't have a socialistic approach to this sport where, hey, I may bring in the money, but everybody here has a family. Everybody here has trainers. Everybody here has managers. Everybody here, I'm going to make sure everybody here eats tonight. And I'm going to make sure you eat tomorrow. And in a few years when I'm not on top of the bill, but I still have a family and I still want to eat tonight, I'm somewhere else on the card, I expect you to return the favor to me. And if I'm gone and I'm retired, then I expect you to pay it forward to the next generation. The wrestlers understand that. And it's because of guys like Al Snow, Joel, and it's because of the things that he shared with us that he tells his young athletes that keeps that appreciation. Al Snow has been in this business 35 years. 35 years of living out of suitcases, of living on the road, away from his family, away from his own bed, away from his dogs. 35 years. And he came on and told us, I never worked one of those days. This is what I want to do. I wanted to do that. When I go to the airport, I remember this is what I signed up for. For 35 years, I haven't worked because I did what I got, what I love to do.
That's the most articulate way you have ever stated your position on that. And I'm on your side now. You took from what he said, you added into what's going on in today's market, and I'm like, wow, I'm blown away. Great job, great analogy. Talking from the heart, that's cool, bro.
I want to get a final thought, if you have one on this, and this is not about politics, though I am going to talk about what's going on in our government. But this is not to take a left or a right stand as much to just ask you a question. Do you believe, okay, Donald Trump said that he was surveilled. People said he wasn't. Do you believe this is a setup of epic proportions by Donald Trump? Because I'll lay out the conspiracy theory for you here. The president said he was surveilled. That's a huge statement, right? He then tells Congress to look into it. Congress, who is so incredibly weak, they all think they're powerful. Congress, they have no power. Congress quickly turns the gun back on the White House and says, you have X amount of days to provide whatever evidence you have of this. And he goes, well, no, I want you guys to look into it. You're the ultimate oversight of all government, so you look into it. So they do everything they can. Of course, they're very weak. So they bring in an FBI director. The FBI director states under oath and publicly, no, he was not surveilled. Speaker of the House comes out, says, no, he was not surveilled. John McCain, who is a matter of votes away from being the president, which would have been a disaster, but John McCain, as much of an idiot he is, he was still in the finals. He comes out, says, no, it's not true. It's not true to the point that Trump owes Obama an apology. Lindsey Graham, who ran for president, very powerful in the Senate, though he's a complete idiot. The good people of North Carolina, no matter how many times the rest of the country has told us, we don't want this guy, you keep sending him back. Lindsey Graham comes out and says, absolutely did not happen. It then comes out that it did. On some level, it did. Now, we're still uncovering this, but it comes out that it did. So what Trump would have achieved, should this have been his goal, and we're going to find out over time, he proved the House to be ineffective, proved the Senate to be ineffective, proved the FBI director to be ineffective. And now it looks as though the puppet master was pulling the strings all the time. It looks as though the puppet master wanted to find out, are any of the three biggest bodies in this country good enough to know what I already know to be true, which is I was surveilled. FBI director stated under oath I wasn't. Speaker of the House stated I was not publicly. Guy that big up in the Senate and his buddy from South Carolina both said I was not. Turns out I was. So how do you guys not have an ability as the ultimate oversight of government affairs not have the ability or the respect or the leadership to get to the bottom of this? The question is, was this his plan all along? Because if it was, he laid a trap, and Mr. Drain the Swamp is now going to be able to clean house on epic levels. So the question is, did this just happen? Or do you believe this was what he meant to happen all along, and he just let it play out?
My name is Paul. And that's between y'all. Eventbrite.com.
Type us in Beyond the Fight with Chael Sonnen. Even though you're there, nice of you to stick me on the bill, Joel. Very nice of you. Beyond the Fight, it'll pop right up. If there are tickets, grab some. See Joel and us to Joel and I tomorrow. Joel, what? What?
I got nothing.
I know. Why do you stand up and go to the mic if there's nothing, man?
For the baby.
Oh, okay. I'll tee you up. Until next time, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
Baby.
Thanks for listening to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
My name is Raven, professional wrestling superstar, world-class idiot, and raconteur extraordinaire. Join me for my new podcast, The Raven Effect, Every Monday here on the Jericho Network on Podcast One, we'll be covering current events and any and all topics that can be properly bantered. Download and listen to the show on PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, or subscribe on iTunes. Quote the Raven, nevermore.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.